And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 802. We're starting the team-by-team positional team previews for the 2026 fantasy baseball season. And who other to join me than the man that has helped me kick off these previews in recent seasons? The team we'll talk about were the American League champions this past year. You can find this individual over at Fantasy Pros on the Sleeper and the Bust and on Twitter at JoeArico99. Joe Arico, how you doing, my friend?
It's great to be back with you, man. This is kind of every year we've done this. I want to say this is the fourth year we've been doing it, and it really does signify in my brain like it's time to get going. I've done a few drafts throughout the winter months, but kind of took it a little bit easy this year. But getting that text from you a couple weeks ago, getting this one on the books, it just in the back of my head, it's like, all right, baseball is officially back. Football is done. Fantasy is done. It's time to really focus in.
Yes, it is. It's funny when I sent out my bat signal to my AL East people. I got a couple, oh man, it's that time already. I said, yep, yes, it is. We are at it. I'm like 3 days earlier than usual, I think. But life comes at you fast. I wanted to get these going before everything else changed. So we will talk Toronto Blue Jays here. Before we get to that, Joe, I mentioned where they can find you. But let everybody know what you got going on. Is you are a busy, busy man on screen, off screen, you name it, you're doing it.
Yeah, appreciate it, man. There's a lot of stuff at Fantasy Pros. You'll see us ramping up the coverage. We've already started putting out some podcasts, but once the calendar flips over, you'll see a lot of drafts, positional previews, things of that nature with myself, Chris Welsh, Joe Pizzapia. We'll be sharing a lot of the hosting duties at Fantasy Pros. And then on Fangraphs, Paul, Justin, and I with the Sleeper and the Bust aren't in like a regular schedule right now. Justin and I did a hot stove update maybe 2 weeks ago. But again, as the calendar is now into 2026, really going to start ramping up those position previews and a lot of preseason content. My second base rankings will be live on Fangraphs in the first week of the new year, and some stuff over at FTN as well, just all over the place, writing articles and doing a lot of podcasts. But it's too much to keep track of the individual places. If you go to my Twitter account, JoeArico99, I usually share out any links or podcast articles or anything like that.
Yeah, Ryan and I always talk behind the scenes about watching our little Joe to see where he's come since it all began. Like, it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek joke, but we always talk about how awesome it is every time we see you take on a new gig or do a new thing, because we remember when you started out and you were grinding and you did the same thing. I don't want to speak completely for you, but I'll try. We all get frustrated at a certain point early on of where it's going to go, and we could see it coming for you, and then you broke through it. So it's good to see. Good to see for sure.
Well, you guys were instrumental, especially in the early days, but throughout the whole time I've known you guys, which is crazy to say. It's been like 5 years we've known each other now. But you guys have always been there to answer questions, to come on when I needed a guest. In the early days when there was 17 followers over on Twitter, you guys were still coming on and helping out. So I've always appreciated your friendship, buddy.
Yep, it's always a good time. And I guess Arizona's not that far away, is it? We'll get to hang out there soon enough. Unless you want to take a trip to Vegas, just throwing it out there. I'd love to see Arico wild in Vegas. That would be a sight to behold. But
one of these days.
That's a separate podcast. all right, let's get to the Jays. Before we get to the actual players here, the floor is yours. Thoughts on the 2025 season for the Jays?
I mean, if you go back and listen to this podcast we did a year ago, there's no chance I mentioned champions of the American League going to the World Series or anything of that nature. It was a surprising year. I think their preseason win total was, mid to high 70s, 76, 77. They overachieved to some extent, but they also got a lot of bounce back from players who were disappointing in 2024. Bo Bichette had a fantastic season. Even though he missed the final month, he was in competition for the AL batting title the whole year. And I think Bobby Witt Jr. only beat him by two or three hits. He really bounced back. George Springer was the main bounce back, and he had probably the best season of his entire career at age 35. He was a top 10 fantasy player. That was huge for them. And they also got timely contributions from guys that you wouldn't really expect. The Nathan Lucases, the Ernie Clements of the world, Addison Barger took a step forward. So everything kind of worked out offensively. Pitching was a little bit shaky, but yeah, Savage came up and was great. They acquired Shane Bieber. Max Scherzer gave them some iffy production in the regular season, but really locked in the playoffs. So everything kind of just worked out at the right time for the Blue Jays. I don't know that you'd look at that team as constructed in a given year and say this is a World Series caliber roster. I think that everything just happened to work out for them. But they have shown, and we'll get into it, a willingness to spend, which leads me to believe that they can continue this trend for the next several years, that it wasn't just a one-off type of a performance that you see, and then they go back to 82 wins this year. I think that they can sustain this, but 2025, I'd be lying if I'm saying it wasn't surprising. I was not expecting a World Series appearance or a Game 7 World Series appearance, let alone.
Yep, I agree. It was awesome to watch. We were all rooting for you, especially us Giants fans, as you're taking on the West Coast Evil Empire. So we were definitely rooting for the Jays around these parts. But let's get into the team here. You're talking about willingness to spend. One guy they already spent a lot of money on when they extended him was Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Vladdy coming off a 23 home run season, his lowest of his basically career as a full-time player, but still hit 292. Still had a very good season, but it's the perennial question is like, can he elevate the ball enough to get enough home runs to be fantasy viable? Or are you just going for all the average and the consistency and playing time? I've been buying in more this year than I ever have, but it's also because his ADP's around 20 since December 1st. What are your thoughts on Vladdy entering this season? He's obviously the team leader. Crazy to think he's only 27 years old.
Yeah, I have him as my number one first baseman, which, I mean, some people might call me a homer for that, and I'll have to just accept it. I am a bit of a homer, but I try and leave that at the door with the fantasy analysis, just a little bit. He is my number one first baseman, and the gap has actually been widening between him and Nick Kurtz early on in draft season. Kurtz was pretty firmly the number one. Now you see them go back and forth a little bit. I think it should be Vladdy. When you're getting that base of batting average that he provides, he's going to be a 280 hitter at worst. Every indication is that he can easily hit over 300. He's done it before. 323 in 2024. Now, the thing that will keep people away potentially is those 23 homers, which are a little bit startling from a guy who's hit 48 in the past, still right in the middle of his prime, but he hits the ball on the ground more than you'd like. That launch angle is only 7-8 degrees, 46-48% ground ball rate. It will limit the overall upside for homers. I don't know that Vladdy's ever going to hit 50 unless he makes some drastic changes, but getting a 30 home run guy who can hit 300 in the second round, and you're talking about the counting stats too that he provides, 100 runs and 100 ribbies, somewhere in that range, he feels like a pretty easy number one. He feels like the pretty easy number one first baseman to me. And I think that he could be a first-round value this year, and it wouldn't really surprise me at all. I've gotten him in the second round in one of my gladiators that I've done. It just feels like a really reasonable price, and maybe some of that is people aren't sure of the supporting cast. If Kyle Tucker and Bo Bichette come back, maybe people feel a little more confident and Vladdy becomes a first-rounder. But as of today, he feels like a really, really great value in the middle of the second round.
Yeah, like I said, I've been buying in more and more because I'm trying to focus on getting some early batting average production because it just dwindles so much. And his elite batting average, for the fact he plays basically every single game, is tremendous as well. It adds a big boost. So I keep telling myself, man, if he could just hit 30 home runs, like this is a great price tag. So I've been talking myself into it. If I don't get him, I kind of go for Pete, trying to get all the power in that regard at the position. Like I get Kurtz. I like Kurtz. I'm worried about what Kurtz will bring, but I have Vladdy at number one for me as well. I think he's just a solid, solid, consistent machine, and obviously anybody can get injured and that changes, but until we see otherwise, like, the dude's a beast. He's going to play every day, and he's going to hit for average at worst. He's going to hit for average and drive in a lot of runs in an offense that should be pretty, pretty good, especially when it's led off by none other than the 36-year-old George Springer. And you already said, like, hey, he's coming off a career season, no doubt about it. Dude hit 309. First time in his career he's hit 300. First time he's hit over 292. He had 32 home runs, third most in his entire career, 106 runs, 84 RBIs, and 18 stolen bases. ADP is 107 right now, Joe. I love George Springer. I get it. I'm also terrified that he's 36 years old. So where do you sit on George Springer?
I think everybody who's drafting him is going to be expecting him to take a step back, and that's right there in the price. But I think that George Springer probably has one or two more decent years in him. It's hard to reconcile the decline that we saw in 2024, a little bit in 2023, a lot in 2024, and then every metric rebounded in a big way in 2025. The barrel rate jumped 7 points. The hard hit rate jumped almost 10 points. He was raising the ball a lot more. Launch angle went from 9 degrees to 17, took 13% off of his ground ball rate. Those are things that I think can maintain to some extent. Is it going to be a 16% barrel rate? Maybe not, but can he be 12 to 13% and give you 25 home runs? I think that he can. My worry with George isn't so much talent. It's about the durability at this stage of his career. He has missed quite a bit of time over the course of his career. And in 2025, it wasn't a huge issue. He only missed 22 games, but there were several different points of the year where George had to miss a couple games here, a couple games there. With all the ailments piling up at his age, it does worry me a little bit. But at the price, outside of the top 100 picks, I think that concern is kind of baked into where you're drafting him. If you look at the other outfielders going around him, I mean, the guy right above him by ADP is O'Neill Cruz. I don't want anything to do with O'Neill Cruz. You got Tyler Soderstrom, who I like, but then you get Springer. After him, there's not really a ton of outfielders until you get Altuve, who's kind of an outfielder. You can put him in there, but you probably won't. Kyle Stowers, 30 picks later. So he's almost on an island a little bit in terms of outfielders. If you need an outfielder in this range, George is definitely the way to go. And I think you just have to accept that, okay, he's probably not going to play 162 games. He's not going to have the same type of offensive output where he has a 166 WRC plus. But if he could be a 130 WRC plus, 25 homers, 10 steals, hits 260, about what Steamer's expecting, I think he pays off at that draft price, especially if we add a Kyle Tucker or a Bo Bichette behind him. We could see George Springer easily score 100 runs.
Yeah, I'm with you. The run production should be tremendous. He's kind of like a older Mookie Betts is the way I kind of look at it. Maybe better. It's kind of in that world where you look at a top-tier offense leading off, getting on base, going to score a bunch of runs. Hopefully the power comes with it. You just don't know if it'll how sustained. But to your point, looking at the quality of contact from George, the improvements are pretty darn good that it'd be hard to see it just completely disappear barring some sort of injury. Speaking of injuries, Dalton Varsho, a dude that had the shoulder injuries, you know, started the season on the IL. We were getting excited for him. Bumps and bruises as usual for Varsho as the season went on, but he still played 71 games and hit 20 home runs in those 71 games while hitting 238. 238 doesn't sound like much, but that's his best batting average since 2021, which is pretty crazy to think about. And the power was still there. He didn't run at all compared to years past, but he also only played 71 games. So we're looking at Dalton Varsho now, quote unquote, healthy at this point in time with an ADP of 195, Joe. This seems like if you're okay at average looking for power, not the worst place to shop.
No, definitely not. Now, there's the thing with the steals, and it's kind of a team thing. The Blue Jays just don't steal a lot of bases. They were 28th in the majors last year. So guys like Varsho, we'll talk about one other guy who kind of relies on his speed for fantasy relevance later on. It's hard to really rely on a 15, 20, 25 steal season. Maybe Varsho can get back to double digits in a healthy season, but I don't think we're going to see him steal as much as his speed might suggest he can. It's really the power that you're buying into, and the power is so legit, I think. Now, if you look at the previous couple seasons, 7% barrel rate, 6% barrel rate, they were not good numbers. This year was 16% barrel rate. He doesn't hit the ball on the ground. There's a lot of fly balls, and when you hit the ball that hard in the air as often as Dalton Varsho does, I think a 30 home run season is in the cards. He strikes out too much. He doesn't have a great on-base rate due to the lack of walks. Hasn't had an OBP above 300 in his time in Toronto. But to your point, if you are a guy who, you know, built for batting average early on, maybe you took the Yandy Diaz types of the world and you're a little bit concerned about your power output, Dalton Varsho is a great draft pick here. It's also a contract year for him, so you never know what you're going to get. Usually guys up their performance, even if it's 5%, 10% in a contract year. Can't guarantee that, obviously, but just another factor in his favor. And the fact that he'll be in a prime RBI spot in this lineup, whether he's hitting fourth or fifth, I think Dalton Varsho, in a healthy season, could drive in 100 in this lineup. I mean, 71 games, he had 55 RBI last year. It's very easy to extrapolate that number and say, if Varsho's healthy, he's going to play every day. We're talking about one of the better defensive players in all of baseball. He's not coming off the field for any reason other than health. And as long as he is healthy, I think Dalton Varsho could be a 30 and 100 guy after pick 200. That is the upside here for sure.
Yep, totally agree. I've been looking at him a lot in drafts just for that power source, late outfielder that's going to play every day. So lots to like there. Let's go behind the dish, a guy you've you've just waved the flag for years. This is one of your boys, Alejandro Kirk. I've always liked him as a catcher too. I've always been like, okay, can he finally play enough to be viable? Because Danny Jansen used to be there to kind of clog things up. Well, Kirk has taken over. He played 130 games this year, hit 15 home runs. The only other time he had double-digit homers was in 2022. He had 14 when he played 139 games. So that's a big thing. But more importantly, at 282. So he's a batting average source, a little bit of power. Where are we at on Kirk heading into this year now? Because my concern with him is ADP is 167. That's fine. But it's like the consistency for the power hasn't been there. And if the power is not there, now we're talking about Gabriel Moreno. We're talking about those type of skill sets. What are your thoughts on Alejandro Kirk, who I know you love, and I probably just offended you right there?
No, you didn't. Honestly, like last year, the thing that killed me was I had a couple of shares of Kirk, but I took my foot off the gas ever so slightly following what we saw in 23 and 24. They were disappointing seasons. They really were. I didn't fully give up on the player or anything, but I didn't have as many shares last year as I typically would of Kirk. I think that the hard hit data really tells us a lot here. 10% barrel rate for him, and we saw that especially in the latter part of the year. He ended the season hitting a lot of home runs. The last series against Tampa into the postseason, Alejandro Kirk was hitting for power, and he had a 51% hard hit rate last season. There was a period, I want to say in July or August, or if you look at the season-long leaderboards, he had the best hard hit rate in the American League. And I think that that's something you can pretty much guarantee with Kirk. He's going to hit the crap out of the ball. You may not get as many home runs as you are hoping for. Like, it might end up being 12 homers, but the batting average feels very, very secure. In those two bad seasons that I mentioned, 23 and 24, they were horrible years for Kirk. He was pretty much an unplayable fantasy asset, and he hit 250 and 253. That's the absolute floor for batting average for a guy like Kirk. And for your catcher too, maybe he's your catcher one, depending on your build, but where the floor is a 250, 260 hitter, and in all likelihood, he's going to hit 280 with double-digit home runs, a good number of runs driven in that order. I think that he's a pretty decent bargain in drafts to this point. And I think also the Blue Jays deserve some kudos for choosing right here between Danny Jansen, Gabriel Moreno. There wasn't a clear answer to that question a couple years ago. The Blue Jays seem to have chosen correctly there. But when you look at who he's going around, Basayo, Moreno, Rutschman, I like a couple guys in that range, but taking a guy like Kirk, especially if you do need to boost your batting average, maybe early in the draft you went for a little more of a power heavy build and you got some 230, 240 hitters, Kirk feels like a really nice 10th, 11th round pick if you went for early power.
Yeah, 10 picks before Moreno, and it seems like, again, similar skills involved there between the two. The one I'm curious about, he's going a lot later, and we have to see if he's healthy and playing time, but Kyber Ruiz is ADP's 389. I think for a while they were used to compare Kirk and Ruiz as very similar batting average guys. Power is always in question. So there's a lot I like in similarities there, but Ruiz is like my catcher three in DCs, where Kirk would be more of a catcher two. So definitely see that. Let's talk Addison Barger, who a lot of people were loving the cheap price last year. Like, hey, look at the gains in the batted ball metrics towards the end of 2024. This is a guy that can burst onto the scenes, and he did. Barger hit 21 home runs, hit 243. Things were great in that regard. Then there's like the platoon concern starting to eke into things, and you actually have to pay for him this year. It's not crazy. It's 195, but you're still paying for him compared to previous seasons. Where are you at on Barger? Because I guess my biggest concern with him is I love the skills. It's the playing time. Like, are they really going to dead set put him in a platoon?
I will lean towards he probably will be in a platoon, but as I mentioned earlier, the Jays are still an incomplete product as of today. I think that there's a chance that Alex Bregman could be a fallback option for them. And if they sign Bregman, he's playing third base every day, and then Barger would be more in an outfield role. I don't know that there'd be a guarantee of everyday playing time. And even as currently constructed today, I don't know if Addison Barger's playing against lefties. I think that he is in the lineup every single day against right-handed pitching. And then there might be, you know, a couple of lefties that he plays against. It's funny. He won me a lot of money hitting a grand slam off of Blake Snell in the playoffs. And even with that said, I don't know that I could say he is just able to hit lefties now. He definitely improved against lefties, but I don't know that the Blue Jays want to, you know, give away that platoon advantage when they have a guy who could play the other side of that, Ernie Clement, and hit lefties extremely well. So I feel like that's the most likely scenario right now, is that Barger plays, you know, 75-80% of the games, mostly against right-handed pitching, mostly at third with some time in the outfield. And I think you have to consider that when you are drafting. He's a guy that's not going to get you 700 plate appearances. He's probably going to be in the 500 range. And I think that what he'll give you in that time is going to be very good. He'll probably give you 20 homers, 70 ribbies, something kind of similar to what we saw this year. And I'm kind of with the Fangraphs depth chart projection of 121 games, 525 PAs, 20 homers, 4 steals. He hits 250. I think that's about what you're going to get from him. And at a position in third base that is not that forgiving, especially once you get out of the early rounds, I think that Barger is a totally fine guy to draft there. He's the 13th third baseman off the board, right around Matt Shaw and Royce Lewis sandwiching him. I prefer Barger over both of those guys as of this point in time. So I'm willing to take a chance on him, but people who are drafting him have to realize that there will be times when you have to find a replacement. If it's for a weekend, if the Jays are facing two lefties, you're probably not going to be starting him.
Yep, no, I like that one because, yeah, I do think when he plays, he's going to be great, but the questions of when or how much is the biggest concern, I think, for people right now. And, yeah, I think he'll be the primary guy. I like you mentioned Ernie. We'll talk about him in a bit. I have a soft spot for Ernie. Really enjoyed him. But we'll get to another platoon first. You mentioned earlier Nathan Lucas, a guy that, to me, just came out of nowhere and really produced for the Jays. In 135 games, 12 homers doesn't sound like much, 255, but he was a staple of getting on base and getting things done with his 323 OBP. There'd be a lot of games where he kind of come out of nowhere. He's 65 ribbies for a guy you weren't expecting to do anything. And what I love about Lucas right now is, again, roster resource, grain of salt, all that stuff. He's in a platoon, which you kind of expect. Projected at second, though, and his ADP since December 1st is 503. Like, that is money to me if these things stay in line. What do you think the game plan is for Lucas this year with the Jays, barring obviously a Tucker or somebody showing up?
So I've gone back and forth on him a little bit. And my initial thought process was, I think he's a soft fade just because people will see that he slotted in to hit second, but any major signing, whether it's Bichette comes back, Bregman, Tucker, whoever it is, I feel like things get shifted around a little bit and Lucas either ends up lower in the order on the bench or potentially not even with the Blue Jays to start the year. I think that that is a possibility. If the Jays hit big on a couple of free agents, Nathan Lucas does not really have a role here. Anthony Santander is going to play. As they paid him a lot of money. He had a horrible year last year, but he is going to be in right field. Dalton Varsho is going to be in center field. And if you sign Kyle Tucker, he is going to be taking that other outfield spot, whether it's left or right, however you figure it out. And that leaves no room for Nathan Lucas. Now, I haven't heard anything on the Kyle Tucker front in like a month. I have no idea what's going to happen, but it does feel like, you know, everything we've heard is that he's going to come to the Blue Jays. Now, fool me once, shame on you, etc. We've heard this story before with the Blue Jays, but it looks like Kyle Tucker is going to be a Blue Jay. I'll probably have egg on my face when people are listening to this in March. But if that's the case, Nathan Lucas doesn't have a regular role, and Nathan Lucas will be on the bench, you know, as kind of a platoon guy, maybe the odd day here and there, but not a regular role for fantasy. If the Blue Jays sign, let's say they get Bo Bichette and Alex Bregman or something like that, it makes it a little bit easier for Nathan Lucas. But like I mentioned earlier, even if it is Bregman, then that'll probably push Barger to the outfield, and they prefer to have Barger's bat over Lucas in the long run, I would imagine. So the fact that his price is so low means I don't mind taking a chance on him. But if it's a format where you got to hold him the whole year, I think people are pretty much done with gladiators. But if there is a gladiator league left and you see Nathan Lucas there, I don't know that I would want to take a chance on him. You know, if it's a draft and hold, I could get behind him as a piece of outfield depth. But there is a real shot that Nathan Lucas doesn't start the year playing for the Blue Jays, that they sign a couple of names and he ends up getting traded. And that would be a good thing if you draft him and he gets traded. But there is a situation where you draft him, he ends up as a bench guy and plays 65 games this year.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. That's why we do these shows, to open up the doors to all of that good stuff. You mentioned Anthony Santander. This is a guy you mentioned got a big paycheck, then was hurt most of 2025. Before that, though, it was 44 homers, 28, 33. We knew we were getting. Average wasn't crushing you, anywhere from 235 to 257. You'd want to be more towards the 250 mark, but you could still live with it. It'd be hitting 44 home runs. And again, this offense should provide plenty of RBI chances as well. Santander's ADP is 244. I think people are concerned with the injury and everything, and I get it. But he finished the year trying to play, I'm going to say, trying to play. And then has this whole offseason. You mentioned if healthy, he's going to play. So where are you at on him? Are you willing to take the chance, or are you still like, God, I don't know how healthy he actually is?
As of today, I'm not 100% sure about his health, but and this can be a tricky thing, relying on the offseason for a guy to get healthy. But it wasn't a super serious injury. There was no surgery or anything like that. Like you mentioned, he did try to play it before they had to take him off the playoff roster. So I'm going to go with the impression that he is healthy. He will be healthy to start 2026. And I think with 2025, there are certain players, certain seasons. Bichette was a huge target last year for that same reason. Jackson Merrill this year. There are certain guys where you look at the previous year and you just kind of have to throw it away. 54 games where he was injured and striking out a lot more than usual, not hitting for power. First year in a new environment, I'm willing to throw it away for Santander. He's a guy, like you mentioned, 44 homers the year prior. He's given you 30-plus. I don't know that there's going to be a 44 home run explosion again. But again, if you even just go for the baseline steamer projection, 26 homers, 75 ribbies, 230 batting average, you'll take that all day at pick 250. And I think that there is room to grow on that. Even if Anthony Santander feels comfortable in his environment, he's able to adjust, you know, bounce back from last year. Maybe we do see a 35 home run season. I would expect more in the mid 20s from him, but he's always been a guy who barrels the ball up very well. Good launch angle in the 20 degree range, lots of fly balls. I like him a lot as an offensive player. Defensively, the Blue Jays may opt for late inning replacements. Anybody who watched John Schneider manage in the playoffs knows he loves to pull guys off the field for defensive replacements. So Miles Straw, whoever coming in the seventh inning, that could cost Santander some at bats. But he's starting, I think, pretty much every single day if he's healthy. And 35 home runs and 100 driven in is the upside if he is batting behind Guerrero, whoever else you want to add in there, Tucker, Bregman. It doesn't matter if he's hitting fifth, sixth in that order. There's gonna be a lot of RBI opportunities for him, and I think we do see a big bounce back.
Yeah, I'm quite intrigued with him, because, you know, something everybody talks about every offseason is I need to find power. Power was a weakness, this and that. Well, yeah. Here's a dude going pretty late that's not the worst guy to take a shot on. Now we'll go opposite power with like speed. The guy's got some pop, don't get me wrong. He hit seven last year. He's had as much as 17, but we're talking Andrés Giménez, who battled injuries last year, only played 101 games after playing 146 or more, three straight seasons. Usually hits 250 or above with that power and speed. Prior to last year, 20, 20, 30, 30. Those were his three seasons of steals back to back to back. So a lot of good stuff there. He's second base eligible, could play short. Well, obviously it depends on if they sign Bichette or someone else. But Giménez has an ADP of 308, like super cheap at a bad second base position. Are we back in on Andrés Giménez?
I'm not. I think part of what I mentioned earlier is the problem is that the Blue Jays don't steal. They really don't. And that's the main thing that you'd be looking to get from him as a 30 steal guy who could go under 10 home runs in a given season. He's not a big batting average asset. If you're drafting Giménez, I would think most people would say, I need that boost in steals. And I don't know that there's a guarantee you're getting that in Toronto, a team that stole 70 some odd bases last year, 28th in baseball. And you also have to look at the rest of the package with Giménez, and that he has gotten worse as a hitter every year since he had that explosion in 2022 where he hit 297. He had a 141 WRC plus. He looked like a star in the making, a six-win season. And the WRC plus every year since has been 96, 83, 70. The batting averages have gone down. The on-base rates have gone down. The power output has gone down every year. So I don't know, even at a weak second base position, how interested I will be in Andrés Giménez. I think if I'm drafting him, it's, you know, as a bench guy, I don't know that I would even feel comfortable starting him as like a middle infield type. Now, he'll probably gain shortstop eligibility throughout the season. I would imagine that the Blue Jays will play him at short, regardless of what happens with Bo Bichette. Giménez should be playing short. He's the much better defensive player, and adding a position of eligibility never hurts. But I don't know that shortstop is really a position where you're desperate to add a guy. You probably have a pretty decent shortstop or two. If it was the other way around, shortstop to second base, maybe be a little more interesting. But Giménez is just not a very impressive offensive player. Every now and then he'll show up like he did in that game against the Mariners where he hit a couple of homers in the playoffs. But you're probably looking at 10 homers, maybe 20 steals with a bad batting average at the bottom of the order. And I just can't get that excited about that.
Fair enough. I have been off of him the last couple of years, but I was just curious with that. kind of ADP drop for him. Let's talk about the super utility player, the Swiss Army knife. I don't know what they call it in Toronto within French, but Ernie Clement is what they might call it because he is that. Clement played 157 games last year, 9 homers, 6 steals at .277. Previous season, 139 games, 12 homers, 12 steals, .263. So, like, stats don't jump off the page. Very much more of a real-life player, but there is a little maybe fantasy appeal, especially second base, third base, shortstop eligible with an ADP around 300. Joe, what are your thoughts on Clement? You've kind of already hinted he's a kind of platoon, be all over the place guy, but even with that, he's, like I said, it's basically been 140 or more games in 2 straight years.
Yeah, I almost look at him like a Brendan Donovan type almost, but Brendan Donovan is like a 120 WRC plus guy where Ernie is right around 100. He really, really thrives against lefties. And I think if you do have him on a team, or even if you're playing like a shallow league, if you're playing on Yahoo and you see the Blue Jays have a couple of lefties coming up that weekend, odds are in a shallow league, he'll be in the waiver wire pool. You can pick him up and start him in situations like that. Is he a guy that I'd want to start every single day of the year fantasy-wise? I don't think so, just because he lacks the juice in the power and speed departments. He played 157 games, almost 600 plate appearances, and it was 9 homers and 6 stolen bases. .277 is helpful over that amount of plate appearances for sure, but 50 RBI, like, there's just not a lot that he's really bringing to the table. I see him as kind of like a super utility guy, like you mentioned. Last year, he played all over the place to the point where if you're playing on a shallow format, he had 15 games at first, so he's probably eligible on Yahoo all over the diamond. There is some value there, but it's negated a little bit by the fact that in those formats, you're only drafting 200, 220 players. If you're playing in a deep format, if you're playing in the NFBC 15 team leagues, there will be some use for Ernie Clement as a middle corner infield guy. You stick him in for utility for a weekend here or there. He's very easy to get into the lineup, but he's the type of guy where if you have him in your lineup for too long, you're going to lose out on juice in the power, RBI, and speed departments. He'll help you in runs, probably give you a little bit of a boost in batting average, but I think he's more of a situational plug and play guy as opposed to I'm starting him 162 times.
Yeah, no, that's the running joke like Ryan and I have is I love Ernie Clement. I think he's a great – I think I mentioned him almost every Fab show, but it's like, yeah, I'm probably not drafting the guy. Just really no real fantasy juice to be squeezed for a full season with him. I mentioned on here anybody else you'd like to discuss. You mentioned a name that I am very curious to hear what you have to say because Joey Loperfido looked – well, once was a bigger prospect with the Astros, comes to Toronto. And then he started getting some run last year, looked real good. Like there was improvements, gets hurt, really never got his chance again. What are your thoughts / expectations for this upcoming season with an ADP of around 7-11?
Yeah, I was disappointed he didn't get a couple more at-bats in the playoffs. I would have thought that he would have been a better guy to have on the bench than Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, especially in retrospect. But Joey Loperfido, he came over in the Yusei Kikuchi deal that brought Toronto Jake Bloss, Will Wagner, and Loperfido. The Jays did really well there. And in 41 games, Loperfido last year, 148 WRC+. It was only 104 plate appearances, but he really thrived in that small sample size. In AAA last year, he had .264 with a .340 on base and a 103 WRC+. So he's been above average, whether you're talking AAA at the major league level, he's not a 148 WRC+ bat, but he did show that he can hit at the big league level. I don't know what the role will be. And like I've said a couple times, the Blue Jays are still kind of an incomplete product at this point. If they do bring in a couple of names, then a guy like Loperfido and one other name I'll mention later will probably have a hard time getting on the field. But as currently constructed, Joey Loperfido is probably going to be in a bench role, and he could end up playing, whether we're talking about a George Springer injury or Dalton Varsho injury. These guys have not been the picture of health the last couple of years. So the Blue Jays will probably need some outfield reps. And a guy like Loperfido, who has hit for power, has shown that he can steal bases. If you look at 2023 across the minor leagues, 25 homers, 27 steals. He does have some of that juice. He gets on base a lot. He walks a good bit. So he's not somebody that I would be, you know, actively targeting in the average draft. If you are a 12 team regular fantasy player, he's probably not much, but his ADP in Draft Champions is after pick 700. He's really like around 47, 48 type of pick. You might end up getting 200 or 300 productive at bats out of him if the Blue Jays do have an injury. And like I mentioned, there's some guys on the Blue Jays who have been known to miss some time. So as a late dart throw, round 47, round 48, I think Loperfido could have some value.
Yeah, no, I get it. That's why I was curious of your thoughts. I liked what we saw, the improvements last season with Lo Profeta. Let's head to the bump. Your rotation started to take some shape, my friend. Like, things are looking pretty strong in Toronto, and it starts off with the guy that you have the white and blue jersey combo of in Kevin Gausman. Gausman, once again, now he'll be 35 this year, which God, just amazing that he's been pitching in the big since he was 22 years old. Put up another 193 innings. That's five straight seasons of 174 or more. Another three sub four is a 3.6 ERA. So that's been consistently good. Strikeouts are still pretty decent. What are your thoughts on Kevin Gausman this year? He gets older, still the quote-unquote number one in the rotation, but there will be arguments to be had with that. But ADP is 116, so you got to pay for him if you want him.
Yeah, that's kind of the beauty of the Blue Jays is that who's the ace? We don't really know, and it might be three different guys if you ask in three different sections of the season. But Kevin Gausman last year, the thing that really impressed me was that his fastball was excellent. And Kevin Gausman has been a guy who has lived and died by the splitter for a long time. The splitter's good, Gausman's good. Splitter's bad, Gausman's bad. The splitter was pretty good last year, but his fastball, the run value on his fastball was the best it's ever been. So if he is able to be more consistent with the fastball and not have to rely as much on the splitter, I'm getting into, you know, Nick Pollock territory here, that is where I think there will be value with Gausman. As long as the fastball is able to be as good or close to as good as it was last year, then he doesn't need to rely as much on the splitter. And the splitter also jumped up after a kind of a bad 2024. It went down in run value. The stuff went down, and it rebounded again last season. So the age is a little bit of a concern, but Gausman is not a guy who needs to rely on massive velocity where you think, okay, he was throwing 97, and now he's going to start losing ticks. He's been like a 94, 95 guy. I think he can maintain that as long as the splitter and the fastball are still working in tandem. Kevin Gausman can do exactly what he did last season, which is a mid-threes type of ERA. I don't know if the whip will be quite as low as 106 again, but even if it's a mid-threes ERA with a 115 to 120 whip, like you mentioned, he is a volume guy, and that is a common theme amongst all the Blue Jays pitchers. Yep. These guys make their starts. They make 30-plus starts every single year, and that is valuable. Availability being the best ability, et cetera. We, you know, it's kind of an overused phrase, but the guy's throwing 180, 190 innings, and he's giving you mid-threes ERAs every single year. The last time his ERA was above three or started with a number that wasn't a three was 2019. So I think that we have a baseline of expectation with Gausman, even if it doesn't come with the strikeouts that it once did. He's still a really reliable pitcher. And I think he's more than solid as an SP2, maybe SP3, depending on the build. But I think we got at least one more really good year coming from Kevin Gausman.
Yeah, I have him as an SP2 on a lot of my teams. So I don't want him as my ace. I like him. I don't want him as my ace, but I definitely don't mind the SP2, more most importantly, for that just workhorse mentality. Just get those innings and rack up the stats. He's kind of like an older Sandy from a couple years ago. Maybe not quite the ratios, but similar idea there. Yeah. Now you're a big splash so far. I say so far to keep things optimistic in Toronto. This is a pitcher that I've had near and dear to my heart for years. I've taken the blows as things have gone poorly. I've also let everybody know when he does very well, and that is Dylan Cease, is now a member of the Toronto Blue Jays. Dylan Cease, you talk about workhorses. It's been 32 or more starts in five straight seasons. Unlike Gausman, though, it's 165 to 180 innings. Gausman works even deeper into games, but it's the ratios with Cease. It's every other year it feels like you get the good ERA and a good whip, but you get the consistent strikeouts. I know some people are annoyed to hear it, but five straight years of 200-plus Ks, you can't discount that in fantasy. That is absolutely elite fantasy production. You just hope the ratios come in line. Cease has an ADP of 71 since December 1st. I'm still all aboard the Dylan Cease train because those underlying metrics were still outstanding last year, and just the results weren't the same.
Yeah, he's the modern version of Aaron Nola. Not that Aaron Nola is not still pitching, but he's doing the Aaron Nola thing.
Okay, there. Did Ryan send you a check or something on that?
I mean, it's just the odd and even year thing, right? I mean, 391 to 220, 458 to 347, up to 455. Those are the ERAs over the last 5 years. And we're due for a good one. And this is kind of what you do with a guy like Cease or with Nola or Edwin Diaz was doing this for a couple of years. you buy the dip. You buy them. This is the time to buy them after the bad year. After next year, when Dylan Cease probably gives you a low threes ERA and his price is a top 40 pick again, then you fade him. He's inconsistent. Like, no question. People were trying to, like, dunk on the Blue Jays. Like, oh, they signed this horrible pitcher. You never know what you're going to get out of him. He's been top five in Cy Young voting two of the last 4 years. The other 2 years were just poor. And the upside of Dylan Cease is why you pay him $200 million, because he does make 32 starts a year, because he does strike out 200 batters. It's worth it. It's worth the risk in a real-life fashion. And I think from fantasy point of view, he's probably your SP1, maybe your SP2. It depends on how you build your teams. If you took a Scooble or a Crochet or Skeens or whatever, then he's your SP2. I think a lot of builds, he would be the SP1, and you can be confident with that as a guy who is going to give you a 30% strikeout rate, who doesn't have quite the same walk issues as he did for the first couple of years. It was always double-digit walks. He's been slightly below double digits the last couple of seasons with the good strikeout rate still being there. The stuff is still there. I don't have the same worries about Dylan Cease that I have seen other people have around the league. I think that he is very, very good. I don't know if I would put him in the elite pitcher category just because of some of those inconsistencies, but for 2026, it's a great buying opportunity for him. I think the price has gone up a little bit since he signed, but 70 to 75 range, the guy's going in there. George Kirby, who has some questions, Lizardo, who has some questions, Bradish, Schwellenbach. There's a lot of questions about all these guys. At least with Dylan Cease, it's not a health thing. With those other guys, it's, well, they've missed a lot of time over the previous few years. With Cease, it's performance, but at least I know he's making 30-plus starts. With those other guys, I don't. In that range, he feels like a really, really safe pick, honestly.
Yeah, I love him. He's been a fantasy ace for me. So I'll continue to ride or die with my Dylan Cease. Now your third in the rotation is a guy that came back this past year after injuries and made 7 starts, 40 innings, and that's Shane Bieber. He's going to be 31 this year. I thought he was older, honestly. It's crazy he's only 31. But he looked really good, you know, coming back from the injury. Like who knows what you could really fully expect. But a 3.57 ERA to go with the whip of 102 and pretty good strikeout numbers. What are your thoughts on the Biebs, who has an ADP of like or close to 150 right now?
So initially, I was going to be really interested in him, and I took him in my first two Gladiators. Just another year removed from Tommy John. Typically, you want to give guys that first year back or that first partial year back to kind of work back their command and get the feel for the ball again and everything. But it looks like he might have pushed it a little bit because the Blue Jays have said that they're going to slow play him throughout the offseason and into spring training. I don't think that he's going to be a guy where they're giving him 30 spring innings and then he's starting the first week of the season. Maybe he is. But all indications are that he kind of pushed himself in October because there was a World Series ring on the line. It's totally understandable. But now he's kind of paying the price for that a little bit in terms of his arm health. So I think he's got to be a bit of a fade at this point. The price isn't terrible, and I think the price has gone down a little bit since we got that news. But I don't want to be stockpiling pitcher injuries before the calendar even says 2026. I can't do it myself. Yeah, he's gone down a little bit. If you look at like the recent dots, sometimes he's going outside of the top 200 picks. In that kind of scenario, I could understand it if you're getting him at his max, which is 216 over the last few weeks. I could understand it if you have a safe base around him, but the bottom line is half of your guys are going to get hurt. I don't want to add an injury before the season even starts.
Yeah, over the last 7 days using Ryan's ADP tracker, it's a 186 ADP in DC, so just dropping. He's gone as high as 129, weirdly enough, but then as low as 233. So he's definitely falling back in some, and I'm with you. I can't bring myself to do it. I'm okay being wrong if he goes out and just shoves. And if he things look good, I'll buy back in the following year. But yeah. I need to see it on this one. This is another one I have a tough time with. And I know how much you love him and everybody should love him because Treya Savage was straight filth. Like, it was absolutely amazing. But to come up and do what he did and then also do it in the postseason against some of the best offenses in baseball is ridiculous. He's filthy, strikeouts for days. But he also has a walk for days, and that's the concern I have when you have to pay an ADP of around 140. Like, I think the stuff electric, no doubt about it, but it's with him, Chase Burns, Mizorowski, they're all going around the same time, and I'm nervous about all of them for multiple reasons. Yeah. Where are you at on Treya Savage? I know you love him, but when it comes to fantasy, are you paying a 140 ADP for him?
Yeah, he'll never buy a drink in the city of Toronto for the rest of his life, but I don't know how interested I am this year. And he's a hard guy to comp because he's just so unique with that arm angle. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of guys who throw like Treya Savage. And also, there's not a lot of guys who've had this trajectory where they have come up mostly and pitched in the playoffs and dominated in the World Series against the Dodgers. I mean, it was 7 innings, 1-run ball, 12 strikeouts. I think there is a part of that, though, that they just weren't that familiar with him. And he dominated the Yankees earlier in the playoffs, too. There is something to be said for that new release angle that he has and these hitters never having seen it before. Once they get more acclimated, now that he is on tape and everybody has seen the way that the ball breaks out of his hand and they know what he's about a little bit, I think he'll have a little bit of trouble adjusting. I don't think he'll be bad by any means, but I think the projections from Steamer are pretty bang on for what I expect. About a 381 ERA, the whip at 128, I don't think it'll be that high, but I think in the 120-ish range with a high threes ERA is what you can expect. You'll probably see some dominant Treya Savage starts where he'll go 7 innings and strike out 10. But I think there'll also be some times where he gets shelled if teams just happen to be seeing that ball out of his hand, you know, starting in the first, second inning. If a team just picks up on something there, because that's a big part of his appeal is that he's so unique. But as teams start to get more used to him, he's going to have to adjust back. We see it every year with a multitude of different players. It'll be how he adjusts back. And I think that he has shown he's quote unquote built for this, and he's got the dog in him and all of that stuff. But I would expect some ups and downs in his first true major league season. He's still a rookie, despite all he did last year. He's still a rookie. And I would expect some ups and downs as he faces these lineups for the first time. I don't know how confident I'd be in him as my SP2. Maybe as a 3, 4, but I don't know about SP2.
Yeah, and that's the thing is I feel like I'm the way I draft, he has to be my SP2, and I can't do it. Like I can't get there with him. I'm going to watch all his starts. I'll be glued to see how awesome it is, but I'm very, very nervous on that one as well. Cody Ponce coming over from the KBO. He was one of the just dominated MVP, Cy Young. He did it all. 180 innings, which was crazy. Like it's the most technically in his career. If you look back at his levels, made 29 starts for the KBO or in the KBO, strikeouts through the roof, ERA of 1.89. Like the dude was just filthy. Now translating that to the big leagues is not always easy, but there has been success, especially in the first year. It's a different pitcher. I think we can all agree that. Different pitcher than when he left. ADP's 312. Thoughts on Cody Ponce?
Yeah, I'm intrigued for sure. I'm trying to figure out how you relate the KBO and the NPB to Major League Baseball is a bit of a tricky one, but generally speaking, I think Japan is considered equivalent to AAA, roughly. And when you get to Korea in the KBO, it's closer to AA. And when he was in Japan the previous couple of years, Cody Ponce had a lot of trouble. 2024, 2023, 2022, specifically 2024 was not a good year for him. But the strikeouts were never there in Japan. We're looking at an 18, 19% strikeout rate in what was, you know, essentially AAA ball. He goes to Korea and it's up to 36%. I don't think I would expect anything close to that coming over to the big leagues. What we've seen over the last few years is some guys come from Korea and they have some success in year one. Eric Fetty and Miles Michaelis are the main guys that come to mind. Year one success stories coming from Korea. Year two and beyond for those guys, we don't know what beyond looks like for Eric Fetty, but year two was rough. Miles Michaelis is almost a running gag in the fantasy community when he's pitching on the other side of your players. So I don't know what this means in the long run for Cody Ponce, but can he have one good year? And that's all we're really looking for 2026 redraft. Can he carry over the kick change and the little adjustments he made in Korea to a good season in 2026? I think he can, but I would also keep expectations in check a little bit. Probably in the 150 to 160 inning range because the Blue Jays, I mean, I don't know what they're going to do with Jose Berríos. They have a couple of other options to start games as well. They got Bowden Francis. They got Jake Bloss. I don't know if they just say to Ponce, you're starting 32 times. You're pitching 200 innings. They might take it easy with him a little bit. And I don't know what that means for the volume. And I also don't really know what to expect from the ratios. 189, 0.94, that ain't happening. He's probably a low fours ERA guy with a mid 1.2s whip. And I think he's more of a streamer as opposed to somebody that I want him in my lineup every time he's taken the bump. I think that he's going to be fine, but I also can't look at him and say he's going to carry this over. He's going to be a star. I think he'll be you know, when we look back at the end of the year, maybe the 75th, 80th most valuable pitch or something like that. But I don't think that this is a fantasy revelation or anything like that.
Yeah, no, like when I wanted the Giants to sign, I'm like, as a team's fifth, I'm like, sweet, bring him on, let's do it. Like, we need all that. Because it doesn't feel like he's going to ever crush you, but it doesn't know if he's like going to be that elite guy. But he doesn't have to be in real life. Fantasy is the question, and I don't know what to expect either. Like, I like him as a depth piece potentially, but he's probably more of a streamer to your point. We're going to have to wait and see, and not likely to be a draft target of mine in fab leagues. We'll just kind of play that game as it goes. Let's head to the bullpen. Jeff Hoffman, 33 saves last year, a 4.37 ERA. Underlying metrics suggest a little bit better. Still had almost over a 29% strikeout rate, so like close to 20% K to walk, which is still very good. With all the transactions in the closing market, it seemed like they were linked to guys to be the next closer. They never really brought one in to be the guy from outside, let's put it that way. Since December 1st, his ADP is 130, but with the closing market drying up rapidly, Hoffman's been moving up in drafts also because DC's everything, it elevates people. He got ADP of 109. He's got as high as 93 over the last week. So keep that in mind. Where are you at on Jeff Hoffman? Because right now in drafts, it's like, okay, he's got the job, so you got to pay attention to that. But I guess the question is, how long or how secure is that job?
So I've done 3 drafts to this point, which is very low number for me. Sitting on December 30th, I've usually done like 10 by now, but took a little bit easy. I've done 3 drafts. I have Jeff Hoffman on all 3 of those teams. And some people will say, oh, he's a homer. Of course he does. But it's because the market didn't seem to understand Jeff Hoffman, and more so the Blue Jays bullpen situation around him. I think everybody was constantly expecting somebody to be signed ahead of him, whether it's Williams, the Blue Jays are going to get Diaz, whoever it is, they're going to make a trade. Maybe they make a trade, but all the free agent potential closers are gone. They've all been signed. I can't think of anybody who's still on the market who would even come close to challenging Jeff Hoffman for the role at this point. And the underlying skills are still very, very good. Like, the home runs last year were abominable. 1.99 homer per 9, 20% homer to fly ball rate. It's a huge anomaly, though, when you look at his career. There have been seasons where he's been high, but he's a 1.46 homer 9. Not a great number, but it's not 2. And I think that's a big difference right there. If he just shaves off a few of the homers, then we will see the Jeff Hoffman that was a dominant setup man in Philly for the last couple of seasons. And we can see, even if it's a, you know, slightly over 3 ERA, I don't think anybody would really care so much as long as he maintains that closer job. And he will maintain that closer job. I would feel very confident planting my flag that Jeff Hoffman will get 90%+ of the save chances for the Jays. Maybe they go to Rogers if they think the matchup makes more sense with the way he throws the ball. Maybe if there are a couple lefties coming up, they want to try Brennan Little or something, or Fluhardy. But Hoffman, I think, is the capital C closer, and he hasn't been priced like one. He's been going, like you mentioned, like well after pick 100. And even in Gladiators earlier, he was after pick 100 when these guys are going in the second round. It felt like a market inefficiency for the last month plus.
Fully agree. And that's been a discussion point for a while, like in the Discord and other places. It's like what to do. And that was when the market was kind of still wide open. But now that it's quieted down, I actually took him in my last draft. I was like, okay, this is the dude. Unless something crazy happens. Yeah, he had a bad run of home runs, like way out of his norm. So if you're a regression person, you'd have to imagine that comes back down to earth a little bit, which changes a lot of things for Jeff Hoffman. And he's got the job. And to your point, there's really no one there knocking on the door. And that's all we're looking for in fantasy. Like, is he elite? No. Does he have to be elite? Probably not. We saw them stick with him through some rough times last year. So I feel like he's the dude barring something crazy. And like, I'm willing to take that chance right now. And obviously things can change. I don't know what would change, but things could change. But for now, it's Jeff Hoffman. And I fully agree with you on that one. Any other arms we should be looking for in Toronto?
The only other name that I mentioned here on this list, I mean, I talked about Jose Berríos briefly earlier, but I don't think that there's a big role for him here one way or another. It looks as of today that he will be like a long reliever, but I don't think he'll be too happy with that role. So I would expect there to be a trade. But Louis Varland is the guy that I think is very interesting, and I'm not sure how fantasy relevant he'll be immediately unless you're playing in a save plus holds league, but I'm still very intrigued with him as a potential starter. Really, really good stuff numbers across his arm. I mean, he's a deep arsenal. You got 3 pitches that grade out as at least 112 on the stuff scale. he's shown that he can handle a big workload. Now, he pitched every single day, it felt like, in the postseason. But he's a guy who came up as a starter, and I would expect that at some point he does get worked back to a starter, or at least to a guy who can pitch two or three inning chunks. I don't know that there's a huge fantasy role for him on 2026 fantasy baseball teams. But if he does get some spot starts, or if he does start throwing two or three innings at a time, I think if you are in a points league, there are, or if you are playing saves plus holds, there are certain formats where Louis Varland can still be really valuable. He had a 2.97 ERA last year, big strikeout rate. I really believe in the talent, and I'm not exactly sure what the role will be, but I just wanted to put him on people's radar. Not that he wasn't already. People, if they watched the playoffs, they were very familiar with Louis Varland, but he's a name that I don't think we should just write off as, oh, he's a bullpen guy, we don't need to worry about him for fantasy. There could be more here. If Hoffman does falter, like, I don't think that he will, but if Hoffman does falter, Louis Varland might be a guy that the Blue Jays say, you know what, with his arsenal, maybe he is a guy that we want to have as our closer for the next several years. Yimi Garcia is 35. Rogers is 35. Tommy Nance, who had some success last year, 35 years old. So I think there is a world where Louis Varland is kind of brought up or brought along as, okay, Hoffman is not working out, you are going to be the next in line. I think that there are a number of different ways where he could have some value this year.
And they showed their hand in the postseason, as you mentioned. Like, they like him in that leverage role late. So yeah. Where there's smoke, there's sometimes fire type deal. So yeah. Keep an eye on that one for sure. Any prospects to keep an eye on this year for maybe fantasy relevance, if possible? Because the top name there I could see being a potential closer also.
Yeah, this is the thing. Ricky Tiedemann, and I'll preface this by saying, like, I'm not a huge, huge prospect guy, but just following the team as much as I do, it's kind of surprising that Ricky Tiedemann has never made a major league start. Now, he's still very young, but he's been around in the system since 2022. He did have to miss a couple years there. And I'm not sure about where he is from a health perspective, but the talent of Ricky Tiedemann, I think, is still there. The command has been a question for sure the last couple of years, but I think it's a 50th round pick, which is pretty much where he's going, or around there, maybe 46th to 50th round pick. There's a non-zero chance that the Blue Jays do a little Trey Savage-esque work with Ricky Tiedemann, where maybe he's not a guy that throughout the whole season is even really talked about as, oh, he's going to come up any day now. But they bring him up midway through the year or towards the end of the year as maybe a multi-inning reliever or as a guy that they want to have a new look for in the playoffs, the same way they did with Yasavage this year. I'm not saying that he is a guy that you need to draft and stash the whole year or anything like that. But when he gets called up, Ricky Tiedemann could be a guy who has a Yasavage-type success story. To that same degree, probably not. But could he give you a couple starts in August and September? I think that there's a chance that he could. The talent is still there. He's come off a lot of prospect lists just because of all the injuries. But Ricky Tiedemann, I think, is somebody that you should have in the back of your mind if you hear that he is getting a spot start later in the year.
I like it. Who else you got for us here?
It's really just the one other name. The third name on the list, I don't think there's much of a chance of him doing much, but RJ Schreck. It's not Schreck like the ogre. It's spelled S-C-H-R-E-C-K. But he's a guy who has made a little bit of noise in the minors for the Blue Jays. Last year, it was 105 games, 18 homers, 9 steals. He had a 3.95 on base rate, mostly at AA. It was like split almost evenly between AA and AAA. But we're talking about a 15% walk rate with only a 20% strikeout rate, hitting in the 250 to 260 range, but a massive boost if he comes up and if you are playing in a points or OBP format. I think it really depends, like a lot of things I've mentioned today, what the Blue Jays continue to do this offseason, but he's already 25 years old. He's already shown he can hit the minors. It's almost like an Addison Barger situation where we know what you can do. You've shown that you are a quality hitter, and there's not really any reason to keep you down longer than you have been. He's been in the system now for a few years, but he's been in the minors since he was 22. He's now 25 with a successful season last year in AAA, in the minors in general, I should say, a 143 WRC plus. I think there's a chance that he gets some at-bats down the stretch.
Nice. All right, we've gone through the roster. We've given our fantasy thoughts. Real life. What are your expectations for 2026? There's only one more tier to go, but is it realistic?
Can they win the big one? I think they can, and they showed that they can get right there. Even with a team that didn't have any expectations, they still showed that they can make the moves in season, bring in the Biebers of the world and the Sir Anthony Dominguez's, make the little moves they need to make. I think it really comes down to what we're talking about in terms of the free agent signings. If they don't get another big free agent, I'd be very worried about this team as currently constructed. The Yankees are still going to be the Yankees. Aaron Judge pretty much carries that offense by himself. The Orioles have made improvements. I think every team in the American League East has made improvements. Everybody's been spending. The Blue Jays did with Dylan Cease, but if they don't continue that through with Tucker, I think it needs to be Tucker and Bichette. And I'm probably sounding greedy, but the Blue Jays need to just lock them in. Even if it's just Tucker, that's fine. But they need to lock in at least one other piece there to be with Vlad. It makes sense that it's Tucker because Tucker offensively is pretty much left-handed Vladdy in terms of their output. He steals bases, but offensively speaking, pretty much a left-handed Vladdy. Having that in the middle of their lineup for the next decade is what they need to do. Rogers is worth $20 billion. They should pay, and I think they will pay. And at the end of the day, we're going to be looking at this team as probably a 90 to 95 win team that will have playoff aspirations again. Get into the World Series. A lot of things need to go right for you for that to happen, but it's definitely a possibility. I haven't looked at a single betting site for win total over under. I would say the Blue Jays are probably, assuming that they get another big free agent, a 92-93 win team at worst.
Nice. I like them. I'm rooting for them. It's a fun team to watch. It's nice to see them actually keep spending money and try to compete in the AL East, which is a very tough place to live. So it's good to see. You have to give the people of Toronto something to root for up there. And hopefully they can get it done, or at least have another good season. Only one team ever wins it all each year. But give it a run. Don't just, lay an egg. Don't go full. Well, White Sox might be good too this year. We'll see. But don't just completely lay an egg. Don't go Pittsburgh Pirates on us. Actually go and do something.
Let's hope not.
But all right. We'll wrap it up there, my friend. Before we head out of here, remind everybody where they can find you, what you got going on.
Well, I want to say thank you for bringing me on, man. It's always a pleasure getting to talk ball. We host 15, 20 shows together a year, and it's every single one of them. It's always a pleasure. But you guys can find me over on Twitter, JoeRico99. Starting to ramp things up more with the offseason. Already halfway done. It's crazy. It feels like the World Series was yesterday, but we're at like the solstice, but halfway to the regular season starting. So I'm going to start ramping things up. I'll have rankings out over on Patreon to go along with stuff on Fangraphs, Fantasy Pros, FTN. If it's a fantasy baseball site, odds are you can find me over there. But JoeRico99. Keep track of everything that I got going on.
Yeah, if for some reason you're not following him, you're doing it wrong. So go check him out. Thanks for joining me as always, my friend. We'll have to chat again sooner than later. But for now, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 802, 2026 Toronto Blue Jays team preview. Catch you all next time.